Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is a Saturday morning, March the 7th, 2015. Wow, going fast. I'm very grateful to be with you as we take a look at three very interesting questions that some very thoughtful people have offered. Hopefully, I'll be able to serve them and help them. And if you ever have a question you would like me to answer, you know, I would be more than happy, more than honored to do so. While my word is not gospel, gospel shouldn't be gospel either. But if there's anything I can do to help you, maybe offer you another point of view or something like that, I would be thrilled. Just come to our website at aspire.org, aspire.org. Go to the top of the page. You will see on any page, contact. The radio page has it too, if you go there to listen. And if you're not a sponsor and you do ask a question, I will send you an MP3 and offer that to you as my gift to you, my hopefully loving gift to you. I want to thank my sponsors who make all this possible. If it were not for you, your kind and loving donations, I would not be on the air. I would not be serving you in this way. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Very, very kind of you. And here are the questions. The first one comes from Ted in Los Angeles. I'm in a dilemma, Greg. How do I choose rightly, if that is a right term for spirituality? If I do one thing, I hurt some people. If I don't do that, I hurt other people. How do I get out of this complex? Well, it's perplexing, isn't it? I don't know what you call a complex here, but I can understand where you might be feeling that it is. We are all put in this situation one way or another. And Ted, I might remind you that nothing is as I think it is. Greg can only see things, if I use Greg, out of his two eyes and his singular thinking, and it can get pretty ugly from there on. So I'd like to remind you of something. Nothing is as I believe it is, as I think it is, as I want it to be. You are not in a dilemma, as you might think. So if you do one thing, you hurt another person. If you do another thing, or not do that thing, you hurt still another person. You want to find a way out where you hurt no one. First of all, I want to tell you how noble that is. I admire that. I truly do. And I think it's wonderful. Your intent is very noble, but you have to understand some things, and I will try to share it with you. People put themselves in postures within in daily living. These postures are not always kind. They're not always loving. They're not always easy to understand. They're not fun to be in, yada yada yada. So we all put ourselves in different postures within based on our emotionality and how we believe and what we believe in and what we don't believe in and what we want and what we don't want and that kind of thing that places us in situations where it can be do or die. It really can be. And for some people, that's just the way it pans out. You are in a position with other people to oversee maybe something very kind and loving happening. I don't know. You are not specific, so I'm kind of blind here a little bit. But what I would do in that given situation is I would sit with my heart. I would wait until I absolutely knew. And then in that knowing, in that waiting, in that effort, I would act accordingly. And sometimes, if you are very, very quiet, it will all happen for you. It will unfold as it needs to unfold. It will unravel as it needs to unravel. And you won't have to do very much at all, if anything. I've been in this a great deal in my own life. I wait. I pause. I follow my heart. I sit quietly with my heart. I don't think about what I should do or what I shouldn't do or what is right or what is wrong. I don't think of any of that. I just sit and I wait and I watch. And I stay away from my emotional nature. And I cannot say this enough to you, Ted. If you get involved in your emotional nature, if what you are doing is all about emotion, then you're going to find that no matter what you do or how you do it, it's going to turn out disastrous. And you really don't want to go to that. So don't go to that. Try to practice diligently watching and waiting. And make sure you are following your heart. Start breathing into and out of your heart. Not your human heart, because it always wants something selfish and vain and cruel. Go into your inner heart, your deep inner heart, and breathe in and out of it, not allowing your mind to get all pointed towards emotionality. Now, that is the key. A lot of us get involved in our emotionality, and when we do, we lose the meaning of ourself in the face of our own life. We lose the meaning of everything that is heartfelt. The reason most of us don't know what we're doing in our life is not because we are stupid. We get stupid. Stupid comes by being emotional and reacting out of an emotionality that absolutely does not do anything but destroy our life. Absolutely destroy it. When I am offering Tibetan pulsing to my group, Ted, when I am offering the meditations that I give to them to resonate to, the tones actually begin to take us away from our emotionality and replace it. Then you are imbibing the tones. The tones are imbibing you. And they work together to create a harmony within that the human mind cannot understand or perceive, cannot even experience, because the human mind is nothing but chaos. It is always working out of chaos and misunderstanding. So if you are to work on this, if you really want to work on this, you sit back, you watch your breath. You do not make a judgment, right or wrong, good or bad. You wait and watch and see how. How is it you're in this position? And don't think in terms of outward mobility. Don't think in terms of, well, I got into this because I did this and I didn't do that and blah, blah. Don't think in terms like that. Think of the state of your inner being, the presence of your inner being. Just sit there and watch and watch and watch and watch. Don't act. Don't react. Again, sitting, breathing, watching your heart, not acting or reacting, you start an inner process. You start to see things as they are. You will see a bigger picture. That this whole situation is not about who's right and wrong or who's good and who's bad. You start to see the position you're in based on the substance of your inner being. You start to awaken to a new presence within you. People try to use personality and ego, their hubris, to make decisions in life and to change circumstances in life. This is the killer. This is what creates my karma. This is what creates my misunderstanding. I work out of a mischief here. And then I am sunk. Then everything I do is lost. Everything I do is lost. Because I'm doing it out of my hubris, not out of my heart. If you truly wish to move towards understanding and awareness, you will move quietly within yourself and wait and watch. One last thing, Ted. There's no perfect answer to anything in this world. People are going to get hurt because they put themselves in the way of what I call the karmic bus. And if a person does that, they do that. And actually, you're doing them a favor by doing whatever you need to do, as long as it doesn't come from a violence within you and by your hand alone, meaning your human hand, seeking vengeance or self-righteousness or something like that. Those are the things you want to stay away from. Now, if you can do what I've just offered to you, if you can understand what I've just given to you, a great deal of love will flow out of you. You'll know. I'll tell you how you'll know you're doing the thing that is most beneficial to everyone. You will feel a sense of gratitude, a sense of mercy, and you will understand inside yourself how to position and posture yourself differently. Instead of from emotionality and hate, you will posture yourself in love, kindness, mercy. Be the merciful hand. That's all you need to remember. Seek mercy. I hope that helped, Ted. I know it sounds nebulous, but you're in a position that, well, is very important to your life that can't be understood with your brain. A lot of very important things cannot be understood through our thinking. Please forgive me, Ted. Please. Namaste. Boy, without knowing the circumstances to that, but it's an intriguing question because all of us have been in that one way or another. You make a decision this way, somebody gets hurt. You make a decision that way, other people get hurt. And then you have to ask yourself, what the hell am I doing in this position in the first place? Well, we're all in that. I mean, every time you go to the grocery store and I go and we choose one apple over another or one fruit or one vegetable over another or one product over another, we're doing the same thing. We really are. And it can't be helped because that's a part of the attrition of this world. It's just a part of it. I don't make up the rules. I'm just observing. And you know what? Next week when I'm talking to you on radio, I might change the whole thing and find out I'm wrong. All right. Next question comes from Randy, who lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. What is it that makes me me? You talk about this in one of your commentaries, and I found it intriguing. Randy, I love this question. I used to lay in bed as a little kid. How old was I? Somewhere between 8 and 10, and lay in bed, and just before I'd go to sleep, I'd sit there or lay there and think, why am I me? Why am I me? Why am I me? I think little kids are learning to, at that stage, kind of adapt to their body, adapt to the rules of their mind and their emotionality, and they start to question what the hell's going on here. Well, let's look at what makes up a me, okay, Randy, because your question is valid and it's beautiful, and I was so happy to see it because it means you read my commentary, and that's an honor and a privilege in the first place. Me is derived out of the preference of emotionality. You only know Randy based in emotionality. What he wants, what he doesn't want, what he thinks, what he can't think, what he likes, what he dislikes. It's all about my emotions and yours. So Greg and Randy are me because of the preferences we place on certain emotions. Now, if you're like the pedestrian mentality kind of person, the only emotions you can think of are the emotions that adorn your emotionality, which you call being in love or being loved. And that's all basically people want. I just want to forget myself and be loved. I just want to forget myself and be loved. And that's the way most people think. But if you think that way, if you live that way, you miss the way. And that's not a good thing. You don't want to miss the way for the sake of trying to get what you want. You got to want nothing, Randy, with all of your heart. And that's what a spiritual practice is all about. Wanting nothing with all of your heart. So what defines me as Greg and what defines you as Randy is our emotionality, where we come from emotionally, what we are seeking emotionally, what we want emotionally, what we think we should and should not have. And we base equanimity on this. We base what we think is fair on this. Well, emotionally, I think it's fair that we do this. Emotionally, I don't think that's fair. Emotionally, this is what's right. And emotionally, that's what's wrong. And then you got genetics. And that comes into play along with the DNA. And this emotionality is greatly based on the genetics, the body you chose to come into in a way. It's really not like I chose to be a Gregory, but Gregory's body with Gregory's mother and father were a system, something that he could be involved in, a system. And it became the catalyst of his entire lifetime by being involved in that system. It was the system that, was created by Gregory being very emotional and living out of his emotionality, hence his mischief in past life experiences that brings me now to this one. And typically, the degree of separation is from one life to another is minimal. Most people don't make a great deal of progress in the course of one lifetime. Not much, if any, at all. So they miss. They miss the meaning of their existence. They miss the meaning of their life because they're being so emotional. We put a lot of emphasis, Randy, on the idea of getting what we want. We think we are successful if we learn to get what we want when we want it and as we want it. So we make it a big freaking deal to get everything we want. Well, I want this and I want to believe that and I want this to happen. I don't want that to happen. We get all wrapped up in all of that. And we think there's nothing wrong with it. Anything that appeals to your emotional nature will be a part of your personality and maybe even your character. And then as long as I live from that emotionality and that kind of character and that kind of thing, then I live foolishly. I don't live in my heart. I don't live for love. I live in a foolish, ambiguous state of seeking what appeals to me. And whatever appeals to me is what I think is right. And whatever I think is right is what I live for. That is the way. That's the way most of us live. There is no me, Randy. When you are no longer interested in me, when you are no longer interested in the preferences that make you a me, the emotionality that makes you a me, when you are no longer interested in that, and that does not mean as much to you as it used to, you will start to find that me does not exist. Your presence in your inner self, your presence within you, is very important. And when you find that presence, and how that presence exists within you, you will set it free by living consciously. And living consciously changes everything. The more conscious I am in my living, the more love I will find in my life. And I will live in the compassion that reveals authentic love, mercy. And you will find that this is what you really are. And this is what you're really all about. Not that. This. Only this. I always say to my students, don't be worried about the now. There is none. Don't be worried about here, there, and everywhere. Just this. What you are within. Just this. That will change everything. I hope that helps you, Randy. What a wonderful question, and I hope one day you and I get to talk and you tell me about the me you think you are or not. Please forgive me. Namaste. We all think we is a me, don't we? Mia, Mia. Okay, last question. This comes from someone who doesn't want me to say their name on the radio. Okay, well, doesn't want me to know where they live, and that's fine. I don't have a problem. Your Valentine's Day message last week was less than romantic. I understand this was your purpose. Are you a misogynist? Why do you hate women so much? the mentality of the pedestrian is kind of hard to deal with. I'm going to call you Madam, okay? Because I can't use your name. Madam. I'm not a misogynist. I don't take sides, men versus women. If you had really read that commentary on Valentine's Day, you would have really understood, if you had really read it, that it was about men and women and what we do to each other and what we put each other through to love each other, and we never really achieve love at all. So to take it personally, of course, being a woman, being highly emotional and insecure about your femininity, even your womanhood, would be natural. I'm not a misogynist. I just don't like the way we use our energies with each other. I am as much a part of that as anyone else. And I talk about it in the commentary. I use me as the goat here. So it wasn't pointed towards women. It wasn't pointed just towards women or just towards men. It was pointed towards all of us. And what happens to us when we enter into a physical body and it's all emotional and gets all emotional about many things. When the commentary came out last Friday, I only heard from men. I never heard from a woman, not once. Isn't that interesting? And even my female students kind of shied away from it because they know what they're doing. Everything is, in our world, a matter of trying to get something we want. And we're ruthless about it. Women are smarter than men in some anyway, well, in many ways. In many, many ways. Women are cunning. And they use their femininity instead of using it for helping the Neanderthal knuckle-dragging male. They use it to capture him. They use it to work against him because they have their own thing going on, and that is about making babies. And if you haven't noticed in the weather, it's a little hot, and it's going to get hotter, and it's all because women want babies. Now, I used to be very athletic when I was younger, and we would, all be taking showers together and playing ball together, football, and I never heard one guy ever say in the shower, in the locker room, on the field, I can't wait to have a baby. I've never heard that. And yet, women, when they're little girls, are all told to play with dolls. And it's kind of expected of you to do it. Little boys play with guns and they shoot each other. Now, how are these two going to act and react with each other? What is going on here, really? We don't stand a chance in this world because of the way we live as the world. We just don't stand a chance. So what I'm saying to you in that commentary is the way it is set up between men and women, it is impossible for love to exist. Absolutely impossible. It ain't a gonna happen. And it's all because of one single reason. We get emotional and we believe in emotionality over love. Love is not interesting to us. Only our emotionality and what we believe is keeping in character with our emotionality, which is connected to our genes and connected to our DNA. And before you know it, we're just mammals and we are living and acting like mammals. We need conscious living. We need to live more consciously. I am not a misogynist, but any man in this world who calls women on their stuff is called a misogynist. And that's just not true. These names that we perpetrate on each other is just not true. What I explained in my commentary was very valuable. I don't know how you got this commentary. Someone must have given it to you because you're not on our list, but I'm glad you read it. I'm glad that it provoked you to write me. And who knows what will come out of this. That commentary is not for everyone, and I warned people not to read it, who were highly sensitive and emotional and all that other stuff, but evidently you didn't heed my warning. So you read at your own risk, eh? I hope you will forgive me, my dear madam. Namaste. If you haven't read that commentary, you probably shouldn't. I'm out of here. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. If you have any comments, questions, or additions that you might want to add to any of this, you've got my email. Email me. Let me know what's on your pee picker, and I'd love to hear from you. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.